The Gaia theory revolutionized science and the environmental movement. It claims that the physical Earth, along with all its inhabitants, make up one single living organism called Gaia. James Lovelock, the creator of the Gaia theory, says Gaia is also self-regulating. And right now, Gaia is reacting to too many greenhouse gases in its atmosphere. This reaction could mean the end of humanity as we know it. Lovelock's new book on global warming is called The Vanishing Face of Gaia, A Final Warning. Steve Paulson spoke with James Lovelock about the book.
Near the beginning of your book, you have, I have to say, kind of a curious comment. You say, our planet does not need saving. It will look after itself. All we can do is to try to save ourselves. Can you explain what you mean?
Yes, I think there's a false idea that we, by our efforts, can save the planet from some sort of fate that we've brought upon it. I think this is completely wrong. Our planet is a very tough entity. It's existed with life on it for 3.5 billion years and withstood insults far worse than anything that human industry has threatened it with.
You're saying that we as a species may die out, but the planet will keep changing and will look after itself.
Exactly. But I would be horrified if we do die out. I don't think we will. I think we're a very tough species. And not only that, we're an enormous benefit to the planet as well as a disadvantage. You see, we're the first intelligent social animal it's ever had. And this means, since we're part of it, that it can see itself from space and see what a beautiful planet it is.
So what do you see as the root of the problem right now, why we're facing this potentially environmental catastrophe?
It's probably just a matter of the evolution of a species like us. It was almost inevitable that we'd behave as we have behaved. In the same way, when photosynthesizers were evolved 2 or 3 billion years ago, they wreaked havoc on a scale far worse than we're doing by producing oxygen and putting it in the atmosphere. Because when oxygen first appeared, it was nearly as toxic as a chlorine would be if some organism produced it in large amounts in the atmosphere now. So the photosynthesizers had to wait a long time to become redwood trees, and the same way we may have to wait quite a while in the evolutional sense to become really a part, an acceptable part of the planet.
Is your basic argument that there are simply too many people on the planet right now, and as a result of that, we're ruining our atmosphere?
Yeah, there are too many of us. And this kind of thing again happens. I think with the photosynthesizers, they went through cycles. There were too many of them and they were cut back. And in biology, this nearly always happens. Species emerge and then multiply if they're too successful. And then they're cut back by disease, by predation, by almost anything.
Now, your book, The Vanishing Face of Gaia, suggests that global warming may have reached a point that is irreversible. Is that what you're saying?
I am indeed.
Which means what?
If you want me to expand on it.
Yes, please.
It means that notions that cutting back CO2 in the atmosphere will bring back the world we knew are just nonsense. We've already made changes that if we stopped everything, all emissions, more farming and so on, tomorrow, it would take thousands of years for the Earth to revert to its original state. But we've gone much beyond that. We've almost certainly set it on course to warming to a new stable state, about 5 degrees hotter than now.
What do you see as the most alarming evidence that global warming is already wreaking havoc on our planet?
Well, perhaps the most obvious one is the melting of the floating ice around the North Pole. You see, a couple of years ago, as little as 40% of that ice that floats on the North Polar Ocean was left at the end of the summer. And they reckon that within 5 to 20 years, all of it will be gone at the end of the summer. Now, when that happens, the dark sea absorbs so much more sunlight than the white ice did that the additional heat load to the Earth is about equal to all of the CO2 we put in the air to date. So, I mean, that is why I think it's irreversible. And that's only one of 5 similar things that are happening that make it irreversible.
Given your status as the godfather of Gaia, you've become one of the great gurus of the environmental movement. And yet, here you are in your new book advocating nuclear power as the only hope that we have to find a viable energy source for the future. You dismiss biofuels and wind power as useless, or maybe even worse than that. How did you come to these conclusions?
I come to the conclusions out of a sense of what we need. I don't sort of plug nuclear power quite as strongly as you suggest. I think it is an unquestioned answer for densely overpopulated countries like the United Kingdom, where I live, or Germany in Europe and other European nations. They don't have much option. You see, 95% of people there live in cities, and cities can't survive without a constant supply of electricity. If that fails, they die in about a week. So nuclear is the only solid, reliable, safe way of making lots of electricity. You're never going to get it from wind turbines. You might get it from solar thermal energy. I do think that has quite a bit of promise. But nuclear's ready and available now, and it's only fear stops us using it.
What about biofuels?
Biofuels are probably the most dangerous and damaging things that we can do. You see, we've already taken more of the Earth's surface to produce food for people than is good. Before we took it to make farms, the forests that were there were helping to regulate the climate of the planet. It's bad enough to do that for food. If we do it to feed our cars as well as our people, it's just madness.
Okay, suppose we follow your blueprint. Suppose we go ahead and build lots of nuclear power plants. How much do we avert global warming then?
Not a lot. It's more a matter of how do we survive. That's the most important thing we have to do, is survive and carry on our genes into the future and hope that a more capable human will evolve later on. But extending nuclear power or solar thermal energy won't turn back global heating. It'll only enable us to live more comfortably with it.
So spell that a little bit more for me. What do you mean? I mean, what will it take for us to survive?
Well, I think it'll take a lot of moving, migration from the hotter and drier areas of the world to the polar basin, for example, to islands and to oases in continents like North America. There's bound to be some oases in the Rockies where there's enough water to grow food.
Of course, the great population centers tend to be in those warmer climates right now. I mean, you're talking devastation coming up in decades.
I don't see anything terribly different from that, and I think our responses are much too slow and inappropriate for us to be able to do anything about it.
It really sounds like you're saying the apocalypse is approaching. I know you're not trying to sugarcoat anything, but do you really want to be this pessimistic?
I'm afraid I don't have any option. I'm not a natural pessimist. In fact, I'm quite an optimist. I don't think it's all that bad. You see, one of the differences between me and most of the rest of my contemporary scientists is age. You see, I was a student at the beginning of World War II, and at that time, there were many forecasts of doom. We thought we were all going to be bombed out of existence. There was the Spanish Civil War that had given us a rerun of what happened. There's Guernica and so on. We thought London would rapidly become the same kind of hopeless waste. Well, it didn't quite happen like that. Once the war started, suddenly young people found there were enormous opportunities for them. Life was more exciting. It was more interesting. And I think very much that the same will happen as global warming hits. Those that don't believe in it will stay put and probably, unfortunately, die. Those that move and do things will be among the survivors, and there will be many of them.
Now, I hear that you are actually scheduled to go up in a rocket plane that will take its passengers to the edge of space. Can you tell me about this? And does this have anything to do with your worry about the state of our planet?
Well, I had the chance in 1961, that's 45 years ago, is it? Something a bit more than that.
Even more than that.
Yes, a bit more than that, to work at Jet Propulsion Labs and to, you know, get a view of the Earth, so to speak, from space by scientific instruments. And that was what led to Gaia's theory of the Earth as a complex self-regulating entity. Then I saw those wonderful, iconic astronauts' photographs of the Earth from space, which I think moved all of us. I never dreamt that by the time I was 90, I'd have a chance to go up where they'd been and look back and see the Earth in that way. I wouldn't miss it for anything.
I would think your doctor would not be too thrilled to see a 90-year-old blast off into space. You don't worry about the health risks here?
Heavens no. I mean, even if it did have adverse effects, what a way to go.
James Lovelock is a legend in the field of Earth science. His Gaia theory revolutionized science and the environmental movement. His latest book is called The Vanishing Face of Gaia, A Final Warning. Steve Paulson spoke with him.